Thank you. It's great to be with you today. In order for you to understand my relationship with Lodge Ahuja over these past few years, you need to know something about my background regarding modeling and data collection. And a long, long time ago in a university far, far away, I was working with Bob Shaw. He had a corn model, and he wanted to answer the question, how often — it seemed like a ridiculous question at the time — how often would you use a center pivot irrigation system in Iowa to stabilize yields? But they had just come out of a drought condition, and so that's what I did. I worked with his corn model to determine the frequency of irrigation use in the 9 crop reporting districts in Iowa. Well, he served on a lot of graduate student committees, and he would always ask this question of these students when they would propose their research: why do you want to measure? And the whatever quantity it was, and it wasn't a suitable answer was not, well, because we can, because we have instrumentation. They had to have it well thought out why they wanted to measure a certain quantity. Well, then I did my doctoral research at the University of Nebraska, where Norman Rosenberg was the director for the Center for Agricultural Meteorology and Climatology. And he had a somewhat different perspective. He said, we're going to measure everything we possibly can, given our time and personnel resources. And that was because he knew that as you get down the line in the data analysis of the experiment, you don't want to be left hanging out to dry where you say, man, if we'd only measured that, then we would know the answer. So that's my background. Measure as much as you can with the resources you have, but you better be able to explain why you're trying to make those measurements. Well, also, when I was at Nebraska, John Norman was there. Many of you know John Norman. And here he is measuring, if you can believe it, he's measuring stomata conductance in the soybean field with 2 parameters at the same time. And one day I was in John's lab building photosynthesis chambers, and I heard from the neighboring room his voice saying, I can model these data much better than you could ever measure them in the field. And I thought, well, what am I building these dumb chambers for if you can model them better? But anyway, I came to understand that he had complete confidence in the physics behind the equations that were in his model. And Lodge is kind of that way. Here's some data from this early experiment. I guess I got a little sidetracked. In 1999, Li Wang Ma called me up, and he needed some corn data for improving the water stress factor in the root zone water quality model. And I think Lodge may have directed him my way. I'm not sure how he got hooked up with me. But because of this experience in collecting fairly complete data sets, I did have a whole bunch of corn data for Li Wang to use. And this is an example of one of the graphs from that analysis, that modeling exercise. And you can see the model, the root zone water quality model, which had a generic plant model at the time, did fairly well in estimating or predicting, simulating corn leaf area index up until the maximum, and then it didn't get the maximum right. But then it got the rate of decline in leaf area pretty good at the end. But Lodge's response to seeing a graph like this was almost always, do you think you made a mistake in measuring? And this used to annoy me greatly, because I was pretty careful about how I measured things and taking care of the data sets when they were done. But I came to understand that he was much like John Norman, in that he had really a lot of confidence in the work that had been done prior to that with the model, and that it was describing the things that were going to happen in a good manner. Anyway, this is the observed and simulated yields from that first data set that Li Wang worked with, showing that corn yields were simulated well over a broad range of yields. And over the past 16 years, I've worked on modeling many data sets with Li Wang, Cedrin, Tim, Jim, Greg, and Pat. Lodge is always in the background to keep everything on track. So this is where I worked, Central Great Plains Research Station. That's in Akron, Colorado, which is in northeastern Colorado. And it's in this, and my desire to use modeling is always to answer questions about cropping systems. And we have responsibility at this station for agricultural production in the central Great Plains, which is Nebraska and Kansas and Colorado and parts of Wyoming. And you can see what's going on here. This is the precipitation map across that region. You can see how that changes fairly rapidly, more rapidly in the south. In southern Kansas, is an inch every 14 miles is the annual precipitation change. And in northern Nebraska, it's an inch every 33 miles. And it gets farther apart than that up in the Dakotas. But we have responsibility for extending the research results that are collected in Akron to a broad range of climates across the central Great Plains. Our mission, in fact, is to enhance the economic and environmental well-being of agriculture by producing cropping systems that are adapted to the region and can make maximum use of soil and water resources. So the sources of the data that we've used are dryland experiments and graded irrigation experiments. And in the dryland experiments, a great share of the data that we've used in these modeling come from the alternative crop rotation experiment, which was started in 1990. So it's a fairly long-term data set. There's 22 rotations there, and they vary in intensity with varying amounts of fallow frequency. There are a number of other shorter, smaller dryland experiments here and at Sydney, Nebraska that we've used that we've got data from. The graded irrigation experiments come from rainout shelter studies, studies under a linear root irrigation system, and then a line source gradient irrigation system. If you're not familiar with that, the two solid yellow lines represent the irrigation lines that are turned on, so there's a fully irrigated center section there. And then the water application falls off linearly with distance from the irrigation line. Those are the graded irrigation points. And then beyond the throw of the sprinkler lines is the rain-fed area. So in a very short period of time, you can get a fairly broad range of water use and yield information. The measurements that we typically make are leaf area index every week, biomass every 2 weeks, soil water to calculate crop water use every 2 weeks, growth stage measurements two or three times a week, daily weather data and yield components. The crops that we've modeled over these past years are wheat, corn, soybean, proso millet, foxtail millet for forage, canola, and triticale for forage. Here's some of the results of simulated versus the measured yields for soybean that we did with both the generic model, with the root zone water quality model, and for the crop growth soybean model. And the two models don't always perform the same. One model does better than the others with certain data sets. This is Proso Millet Sassy, developed this model from Ceres sorghum. And again, over a fairly broad range that we can predict millet yields fairly accurately. If you don't know Proso Millet, it's a well-adapted, short-season, low-water-use crop, C4 species, well adapted to the central Great Plains, but it's bird seed. And so there's not a huge market for bird seed, but it actually is a very, very important component to cropping systems in the central Great Plains. So we were glad that Sassy did that work for us. Sassy also created crop grow canola and created that from crop grow faba bean. And again, over a very broad range, the model as implemented in the root zone water quality 2 model can simulate canola yields quite well. Now, this is actually really important because one of the things we do is try to diversify cropping systems in the Great Plains away from just wheat systems. And farmers want to know the kind of risk that they might be taking if they start producing a crop that they have no experience with. And canola, of course, is one of them. So here's the results of some work that we did with that canola model, where we are simulating yields for several different locations in Nebraska, Colorado, and Kansas. And we did that with different plant available water contents at planting. And you can see that for this particular case, it's simulating well. It's simulating what you would expect across the region, where the precipitation gradient is going from east to west, and the temperature gradient is going from north to south, with the highest yields there at Champion, Nebraska, and the lowest yields at Walsh, Colorado. You can use that same kind of information in to create these cumulative probability exceedance distributions. And in this particular case, the farmer could use this graph to say what are the chances that I can produce at least 1,000 pounds of seed. And in this particular case, if you have 25% plant available water at planting, which is the red line, your chance of getting that yield or greater is 52%. But if you had your soil water content at field capacity, which is the green line, that it would be 85%. We've put those probability distributions into a simple spreadsheet calculator, and here the user just clicks on the yellow box and selects one of the 9 choices of locations, puts in the percent plant available water at planting, his estimate of that and what his target yield is, and his probability is shown in the green box. So in this particular case at Tribune, Kansas, with soil water at planting at field capacity, the chances of getting 1,000 pound per acre canola yield or greater is 78%. We've done that with corn and Proso millet and Foxtail millet and Triticale, where we create the cumulative probability exceedance relationships with model runs from 61 years of weather data and 7 starting soil water contents, and we've created that same simple spreadsheet calculator to help the farmers assess the risk in adding the new crop to the system. Here's one other example. This shows how you might apply effectively limited irrigation. These circles indicate the amount of the center pivot circle that's irrigated, which is yellow, and the red is then what would be left to rain fed. So if you had 12 inches available for the entire pivot, how best would you apply that? Well, the answer is spread evenly over the entire pivot if you have that much. But the green numbers are if you only had 4 inches of available, you would irrigate half the pivot and leave half of it as rain fed. So my final thoughts are models help us understand systems and the complicated interactions that are going on within the system. Models let us make some predictions about crop production in varying climates and likely successful or unsuccessful cropping systems. I didn't talk much about that, but I think Lodge may have a slide about that later. Models let us extend the results of field research to other locations and other climatic conditions over extended time periods. Lodge Ahuja was instrumental in fostering a productive scientific relationship between the Agricultural Systems Research Unit in Fort Collins and the Central Great Plains Research Station in Akron, resulting in 25 journal publications, 15 proceedings, book chapters, and fact sheets, and many, many presentations to farmers, agribusiness personnel, NRCS, FSA, and RMA as well. So, as I go merrily on my way collecting data, I will always have the feeling that Lodge is looking over my shoulder saying, make sure you make no mistakes because I'll be asking you to verify your data validity. So thank you, Lodge, for great ideas, great discussion, great mentoring, great friendship, and great kindness. He is one of the kindest men I know.